Welcome to Petite Marxist Clover, everyone. I am your co-host, Angles Next Door, and with me is my co-host, Eric Hobsbawm. We are continuing our wonderful discussion because the return of a character who we have only known from weird fan art, it seems like, has finally returned, and she's a yandere.
Everything goes back to yandere.
I guess it does. Are you upset with this revelation?
The revelation that we're all just doing because of the fan art?
The fan art? And I think we... Yeah. Come on. You weren't shocked?
And also, nobody pours out two cups of coffee when they're alone. One for their long-lost lover. Without being a bit yandere.
Can we relitigate that particular scene, even though that was from a few episodes ago? I don't know if we gave that scene as much love as...
Yeah,
as
particularly since she drank coffee again in this episode. And I'm kind of curious about her drinking taste.
But what I really liked about that scene is just the idea that she pour the cup. And I like to think that she does it all the time.
Yeah. Like, everything she consumes, she leaves. Like, it's like a some Buddhist households, you'd leave some food for the little statue of the Buddha you'd have, like, on New Year's Day and stuff. I feel that that's what she does. It's just an offering to the Sakiko in the sky.
Yeah, but I also like to think that she just lingers there for a really long time. And it's like, maybe she'll knock on the door tonight. She'll come home.
Yeah, as the Jim Reese song goes. Maybe it's just the old man.
Sure. Most famous American musician of all time. Yes, Jim Reeves is the biggest artist of all time. I can name all of his songs. Like the old man, blah, 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 whatever you just said.
Partners. Two partners went in search of gold. One was young and one was old. And the gay young fool was me.
Okay. What does this have to do with Ave Mojica?
One of them kills the other one?
That's what happens in the Jim Reeves song?
Yeah, because the food ran low, so I killed my friend. What else was there to do?
You know, she seems to have the food and she keeps buying the food. I don't think the food is running low. I think she always has extra food because she keeps making extra food.
So does the food get thrown out?
No, I think she freezes it.
Oh, so like there's a backlog to force feed Sakiko when she comes back?
Yeah, of course. It's like, also she's probably going to label it with dates and she probably has a diary of all... No, she probably has like a calendar of all of the time she didn't get to spend with Sakiko.
Whoa.
So, getting into the episode proper, this is probably the most equitable episode we've had in a while in terms of screen time for all the characters, it seemed like. It's weird because Mutsumi kind of is still the center. Also, she's dead. We'll get to that. Is still very much the center of this show, but... She didn't have, like, the best scenes in this episode, which is the first. It's been a long time since she's not had the best scene of an episode.
Even though you could still argue she does.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. So this episode begins with our favorite blonde-haired girl named Dolores. You actually say it.
Dolores. And now we know why she is called Dolores. She's sad all the time.
She is sad all the time.
Because her feelings towards Sakiko aren't reciprocated.
Like last week, we realized that there was some stuff that we didn't have time to translate. There's like some bits in the last episode where we didn't mention that there was a... Like you said, I think you sent me that there was a tweet.
No jacket required was looking at a news site called Deep Seek News.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that has something to do with the AIs. No jacket required getting her news from the DeepSeek AI.
Wait, are you telling me like the show is like working on the fly? That's pretty fun, where it's like, oh, that was relevant like a few weeks ago.
Well, it doesn't quite make sense because it looked like she was reading a newspaper, not like some sort of large language model.
Yeah.
So maybe they just liked the name and they saw the name in the news. Oh, maybe this has already been part of the universe for a while, the Deep Seek news source and the hedge fund that created it, the large language model, they're just big fans. Also, the DeepSeek article was asking about what the nature of acting is and how real is it. So again, we're going back to the question of what is real.
This show, like, this was a weird episode about what is real, because, like, and I think that's actually a really good transition to after the opening, we get to, like, the first big question of this show, because we see, like, because we're seeing, like, a performance of Ave Mujica, but it's like, a clip?
Yeah, so the show rewinds the tape of the opening.
Yeah.
And replays the end of the opening, and then it turns out the opening we've been watching is in one of those TV screens that live in Mutsumi Mortis Land.
Yeah, and we had a quick discussion about this. We don't know if she's actually learning to play the guitar, or else she's pantomiming the guitar, so I never...
Yeah, at times in the episode, it felt like it was implying that Mortis is just acting out the guitar, but then at times it sounds like, no, she now can play the guitar, so...
I think I'm leaning more... I'm going to be controversial on this and say, I think she might be playing it.
I think so, too, because I think the end of the episode makes more sense.
Oh, also, there is a moment when she does perform it to No Jacket Required. I am just remembering this.
That was the moment that I thought it was pantomime.
Okay.
Because No Jacket Required said you need to act more truthfully or something like that.
That's right. That made it more confusing. Okay. Okay, yeah. As we say about the production of these, is I watch these like a day or two before Eric does, so...
Yeah, so at that moment, I thought she was pantomiming, but I think the end of the episode makes most sense if she actually plays it.
I mean, she does do a freakish thing in this episode where she carries a guitar without a case around.
On public transport, and not only that, but carries it in a just flat-out reckless way where, like, the... What do you call it? The arm of the guitar?
Yeah.
What do you call it, the long part?
The neck. The neck.
Okay. Yeah, so she holds the neck of the guitar. Like, holds the guitar so that the neck is, like, just jutting out, like, taking out, like, two other seats next to her.
Oh, and, like, it's evil.
Like, I thought she was literally gonna, like, knock someone unconscious there.
Yeah. No, 100%. We did not talk about this beforehand, but I'm happy you two were bothered by this, because I was really nervous that you were not going to be bothered by this.
Oh, no. As a lover of public transport, I insist on good public transport etiquette, which is don't carry a long object in a way that feels like you are using it as a weapon.
Also, for me, as a person that played violin for many years and had a case...
So many ways your instrument could get damaged.
Yeah. You never know, like, you know, maybe a stop happens very quickly, or maybe you fall asleep on the train and you accidentally let go of the guitar. Maybe you're weird and you're like, I need to check my phone. And you're like, oh, shoot, I have a guitar in my hand.
Maybe somebody just brushes past you in a hurry.
Maybe somebody's like, I like Fooly Cooly. They used a guitar as a weapon and just grabbed the neck of the guitar and then killed Mutsumi, because she dies in this episode, metaphorically. But what if she died literally?
Well, should we move on to that?
I mean, that's towards the end of the episode, but yeah, we could talk about that.
Okay.
That Mutsumi is dead. Long live Mortis. But yeah, Mutsumi is dead. At least it seems that way.
Yeah, so Mutsumi meets up with one of the members of Richard Krajicek.
Yeah, the Maigo people. Tomori. I'm really annoyed that I know some of the names of the Maigo people, but if you ask me what the real names of most of the members of Ave Mujica, I'd be like, fork on the left.
Yeah, so she goes to meet up with Tomori, hashtag not my purple haired girl.
Yeah, Krajicek, from what we learned in the episode, Saki wants to bring back Krajicek, which I think is really strange because literally Maigo exists, and I don't know if everyone in Maigo, I don't know how successful Maigo is. As we've said, we have not watched Maigo, so Maigo does not seem popular at all, except in this, for the first time, this episode, it felt like they acknowledged that they're famous, and that the pink-haired girl had to wear glasses when they were at a cafe. That was weird.
I was not entirely sure whether she was doing that to avoid suspicions of the paparazzi or whether she was doing that to confuse the blonde girl to stop her from murdering her.
Oh, we'll get to the blonde girl.
Because both seemed quite likely by that point.
I'm one of the Facebook groups. I have a supercut of all of her fun expressions this episode. All of her expressions, like her crazy eye expressions, are just the best. Like, that's really meat of the matter we want to talk about this episode. But after she learns that Saki wants to bring Krychik back, this makes Morse upset. Like, what leads to Mutsumi dying? Well, you remember when Mutsumi, like, falls off of the stage? Like, what leads to that stage?
So, it wasn't a stage. It was a balcony.
Yeah, that led to the stage.
That was like a Ave Mujica-style balcony on a stage.
Yeah, it was like a staircase on a stage.
Because Mortis and Mutsumi were fighting over the guitar. Because Mortis wants to be the guitarist of Ave Mujica.
Yeah.
And Mutsumi wants to be the guitarist of Krychik.
Yes.
And it's really weird because it seems like Mutsumi wants to be back in Krychik because Sakiko was only happy doing Krychik and not Ave Mujica.
Uh-huh.
And Sakiko wants to restart Krychik because she thinks that's what's going to make Mutsumi happy. There's a bit of a circular logic going on. Also, people were like, Sakiko was so much happier at Krychik. And I'm like, yeah, maybe it's because she hadn't been kicked out of her home and her father didn't become an alcoholic at that point. Like, maybe the band isn't what made her unhappy, but, you know, her whole life falling apart.
Oh, get your facts straight. She was never kicked out of her home. She chose to leave after her dad embezzled money, allegedly, because I still don't believe he did that. I feel the grandfather did this on purpose, literally committed fraud so that he could push the father out of the family. I know I've brought this up before, but I'll keep bringing it up.
We are waiting for dad redemption in this show.
I'm not. Like, he's like one of the only few dudes that exists in the show. I don't want my dudes in this type of series. Like, their dudes are really boring.
But you don't want to find him happy and reunited with Sakiko and Sakiko can recreate a happy family? Or do you want her to suffer like Mortis does?
Well, I don't know. She makes better art. You know, some people are like, when artists are sad and depressed, that's when they make the best art.
But we've already been over this. David Lynch has explained pretty clearly that that's not the case.
Nah, like, it's better that way. So they're just happier when they're more sad.
Because this is the crux of the Mortis argument, is Mortis exists to help Mutsumi through dark times. And if Krychik comes back and Mutsumi's happy, Mortis will cease to exist, because there won't be a need for Mortis.
Yeah.
While if Ave Mujica happens, Mutsumi would be depressed all the time, so Mortis will still be alive and well. So then its question is, which is more important, Mutsumi's happiness or Mortis's right to live?
Most of the characters take the path of Mortis deserves a right to live.
Really? I thought there's only one character who thinks that.
No Jacket Required, yes.
Yeah, No Jacket Required is going to bat for Mortis, and she's like, how can you talk about Mutsumi's happiness when Mortis dying is inherently a bad outcome for Mortis on par with unhappiness? And now, so now we're getting into like a Buddhist discussion about existence, and
it's really funny. It's like, but Mortis will be sad. Yeah, no, I'm happy. This is kind of where this is going. Yeah, it is inherently, and this is where this whole like concept of this show is just so bonkers of the Mortis character, is that Mortis is literally a trauma response, and that's all Mortis is.
So do you owe anything to your trauma response? Like, this is the problem. It's like the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
Like, it is literal life and death for Mortis. But also, you could argue that life in pain is worse than non-existence. I mean, that's literally what Buddhism is based on.
Yeah, and she just wants to exist for existence sake.
Yeah, she just wants to live.
She wants to live, but she also kind of feels like she wants Mutsumi to suffer. Actually, when I say kind of, she does, because her existence is based upon Mutsumi suffering.
She doesn't want to see Mutsumi suffer per se, but the only way she can live is by Mutsumi suffering.
I'm sad we didn't talk about this earlier in the series, because guess what? Once again, she's dead. We've alluded to this. So this whole ethical argument we're having right now, even though No Jacket Required thinks this is still an ethical argument, because Mutsumi's dead, even though we also heard the other personalities in Mutsumi's head are dead, but then there they are in the audience.
They come back.
They're in the audience for some reason. I guess what's dead is never dead when it's metaphorical.
Yeah, so Mutsumi and Mortis fight over the guitar, and Mutsumi falls off the balcony.
Into a really bad stage. I mean, I don't know if Eric Adams approved this stage or something and said, no, this is good. And that Mutsumi's like, hey, we'll get you free tickets to Turkey. And Eric Adams like, okay, yeah, I'll approve this stage.
Oh, the building permits just don't add up.
Yeah, the building, like, I think even in your mind palace that it should be up to code. Also, I don't think this is a very safe set if you're able to fall off of like a railing. There's a reason why railings exist. It's to stop you from falling off the railing.
Yeah. And then also there's like no bottom. Like she just falls through into oblivion.
Yeah. Like I said, I feel that Eric Adams wasn't doing his job as mayor here of Mutsumi's brain.
He was too busy searching Mutsumi's room.
Yeah, for, you know, a backpack of...
For a crack pipe.
A knapsack of many locations or some sort. If you've never seen Eric Adams' public service announcement about the dangers your children could bring home in their room.
And how to search your home.
Because you have no First Amendment rights. It's Fourth Amendment rights if you're in the United States. But... definitely, this is a show about rights and rights being violated and what's real and what's not real. And
right, because it is the right to live for Mortis that's being decided. It's like, I know there's like a court case in the UK a decade or two ago where there was like a set of conjoined twin babies. And I think the doctors deemed that one twin was definitely going to die. And the other one could survive, but the procedure to separate them to make that one twin survive would definitely kill the other twin. So since basically the doctors would, in a way, be killing that other twin, even though they were both going to die without this procedure, the government had to appoint a court representative, a lawyer for each twin, and it had to be decided in the courts about... yeah, but basically whether that one twin's right to life could be overruled by this being the only way to keep the other twin alive.
How do you know about this?
I did some research into conjoined twins back in the day.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, Mutsumi is dead for now. So we also get the most confusing turn too with Mutsumi, where Mortis is now acting like Mutsumi.
She hasn't told everyone that Mutsumi's dead, so now she's pretending to be Mutsumi to manipulate events, which feels very manipulative.
Yes.
But at the same time, it is kind of in her right. I mean, it is her body, but it's the ethics here are all over the place.
The ethics here are all over the place because we're talking about a mental health case that literally, this person needs help, and this is so whacked out and strange in this respect. I don't know. It's interesting. As I've said in previous episodes, like the mental health stuff of this, it's just like, as a person that works around people's mental health, it's strange that there's no help for this child, and it depresses me.
Yeah.
It's fun, but it's just really weird, because there's part of me is like, because like, I know we're sticking a long time, Mortis. Are we supposed to like Mortis or dislike Mortis? Like, I guess we've never really talked about this before.
I think we were supposed to like her up until the moment she started impersonating as Mutsumi. Because that feels like crossing a line. But maybe it's not.
I think also what's interesting is that Mutsumi's Mutsumi. And most people that would interact with her think she's Mutsumi.
Yeah.
They're like, there's no such thing as worse. I do like the people on the train are like, it's Mutsumi. I'm like, well, she doesn't like being talked to, so we're not going to like be freaks about it.
It's just very nice of them.
Which is good. I don't know. I think that's the weird thing about it is that I don't know who we're supposed to root for. I mean, once again, Mutsumi is dead. She's probably not dead, but she's dead. So we only really can cheer for Mortis at this point.
And are we supposed to root for anyone? It's just a complicated situation and yeah. Everyone's in a hard spot. Like, No Jacket Required is in a hard spot. At another point, again, she gets called untrustworthy and her face is in so much pain when that happens.
I do think this does a better job of talking about why she's untrustworthy than even the last episode did. Because I think when she shows up again, like, how often she shows up and just does not care about, like, anyone's feelings of the matter. She's like, I want Ave Mujica to come back. Like, I'm going to say, you want Mortis to die? What's wrong with you? And it's like, gals, this Mortis thing is, like, so far away from any of your guys' like, discussion points. Like, expertise that should not threaten that a personality is going to die as a way of bringing a band back together.
Also, you know that if Mortis' existence didn't help her, she'd be on the kill Mortis train, 100%. Like, she only cares about Mortis in this case as a means to her own ends.
And it always goes back. Is Mortis just like a football manager? I feel like Mortis is like a key player that's injury prone. That you're like, oh, this player's really good, but they're injury prone. So they could get injured at any moment. And that would be awful. But then I'm like, why not just replace her with a slightly worse player? And that's it. But is it because now that people know that she's Mutsumi, that No Jack Required also is using that aspect of her fame that Ave Mujica now cannot be Ave Mujica without Mutsumi?
You're saying that if it was before the mask reveal,
of course,
they could have just found some other guitarist, put on a green wig and a face mask, and no one would know the difference?
Yeah, I mean, I still think they could do that, but I think No Jacket Required is too stupid to
realize.
Well, I
think No Jacket Required is like, this is the first time I'm actually gonna decide to get attached to a band. So I need it back the way it was, back the way I care about it.
Also, I'm going to disagree with you. I just think No Jack Required just wants the bag. She wants her money.
No, because she specifically talks about how every band she had been in before then,
uh-huh,
she had gone in looking to dump them eventually. So she's making a show of, this is the first time she's like, I need it to be this bad.
Okay, and now that you said that, that's also a reason why she's untrustworthy, because she doesn't get that they're broken up and trying to force them back together without barely any of them wanting to come back together.
Yeah.
Like there's only two characters that I think, maybe three in, oh wait.
So head count.
Okay.
Okay, Sakiko and Mutsumi don't want to come back to Ave Mujica. They want Krychek.
So we have 1.5. I'm going to be very evil and say that Mutsumi is half a person.
Okay. So those who want to be in the band, No Jacket Required and Mortis. So that's another 1.5. And Dolores.
And Dolores wants the band back together.
Dolores really wants them back together. So much so that it probably shouldn't, just because she exists.
We'll talk about her. We're saving the best for last. Like, there's a reason we haven't talked about her that much yet.
And the purple-haired girl.
I think she could go both ways.
She could go both ways. She's the free agent at the moment. She is struggling to move on with her career. Acting is still hard for her. So there is like this idea of maybe having Ave Mujica back would be like this out for her to like reinvigorate her passion in showbiz. But I feel like she could just do fine. Just keep plugging away at it and she'll be fine.
Also, the fact that peak acting is still sitting inert will never not fascinate me.
Purple-haired girl is still obsessed with Mortis lying inert, and that is like the apex of acting for her, and she's kind of traumatized by it.
It's so strange. Like, it's so strange how much radio play, or I guess how much thought play that gets for Amoris all the time.
So maybe Purple-haired girl needs to return to Ave Mojica to face the acting trauma head on and be around Mutsumi Mortis. But I don't know. Yeah, she's the free agent, and it sounds like she's going to kind of decide how it goes.
I think so. Even though the more the show goes on, the more I don't understand how they functioned as a group, and I do not think they should become a band again.
Well, if you remember when they were a group, they were all really miserable, and low-key looked like they hated each other.
Except for one character, who loved another character.
A little too much.
A little too much. And that's where the final part of this episode we're going to talk about comes in. So, Dolores, oh my god, what a character in this episode. We have talked about her, like, making tea or coffee. We don't know. And then having another mug of it waiting for Sakiko all this time. But, like, one of the first things we see of her doing in this episode after she's in that car is that she goes to that agency to ask the agency if they have the costumes of Ave Mojica still. And they're like, we don't. We threw them away.
They might be in the storeroom.
They might be in the storeroom.
She just goes dumpster diving in the storeroom.
And then she finds the Oblivionus one, and it's gone.
Which made me worried, because I was worried she was going to do some sort of creepy sniffing stuff.
Oh, she did do the creepy sniffing stuff, didn't she?
Oh, okay.
Like, I mean, she embraced it. She, like, held that, basically, that the where the costume was, like, close to her chest. She's like, I miss you. So, okay, I have one thought. This is not connected to the blonde girl's journey. Why did they throw out the outfits?
You're saying they should have kept it in case it needed to be a prop for something else?
Yeah. I mean, they were the hottest. They burned so brightly. They'd be like, guys, these are the outfits of the Ave Mojica. They literally became popular after their first performance and were selling out arenas. That is still my theory. Like, I don't understand, again, how they became famous and became popular.
Yeah, but, like, they weren't famous for long. Like, it's not like the Beatles. Like,
oh, they're bigger than Beatles, I agree.
Like, is some agency out there, like, holding on to Iggy Azalea's costume from Fancy in case somebody in the future wants it?
I mean, that's copying Clueless, but that's besides the point. That's true.
Like, at a certain point, you're going to run out of space, right? I mean, I know we know someone who worked with props, and I don't know how much of hoarders are prop managers.
I don't know. I feel like you would keep that, because, like, also, they haven't been gone for that long. But it also is a part of my other conspiracy theory that maybe the grandpa, like, Sakiko's grandpa, this is all, like, an elaborate way of just stopping her from pursuing music and to become the next head of the conglomerate by marrying the...
There was a line by the blonde girl's agency president about the decision to reform Ave Mojica would have to come from the top. And that was not really explained what that meant.
Uh-huh.
So is that alluding to some corporate overlords?
Yeah, so I think the grandpa is legitimately messing around with things. Like, do you... Because, like, also part of... like, because we have the theory that he also... I think he also sabotaged Krychik as well.
Well, he did by kicking the dad out.
Yeah.
Onto the street.
Yeah.
But that might have just been because he hated your dad.
Yeah, but what if he was playing 3D chess and was planning, like, Ave Mojica's existence? So, because he knew after that she was still attracted to music and would go on to create a trauma band. But then, what if he also funded MyGo to become big so that there's basically no option for Krychik to reform as well?
So you're saying he wrote the show?
He wrote the show. He is the Sosuke Aizen of Ave Mojica. That's a Bleach reference.
Whoa.
So Blonde Girl also has a meeting with Anon, the pink-haired girl, at a cafe. We alluded to this earlier. And it is excellent. Because this is where we get this wonderful... earlier she had the peak expressions, but her expressions just are so weird, the blonde girls. Like, she wants to murder people. She's upset. She's really upset. Like, seeing the fact that, like, Sakiko was happy, and she wasn't there, like, legitimately made her, like, so angry.
Yeah.
Like, those were eyes of a killer. That's why she's a yandere.
Yeah. When you see those eyes, you know things aren't going to end well.
No. And that's why, sadly, even though the fan art has been alluding to this, I don't think Blonde Girl is a good girlfriend because she doesn't want to see Sakiko happy unless it's with her. I don't think that's a good option in a relationship. She also is willing to push people downstairs. And for people that do know, yes, this is the best part of episode 9, what we've been leading to, is that blonde-haired girl, Dolores, had a murder fantasy or a harming fantasy about pushing Mutsumi downstairs. And it was awesome. The music was great. I had to look up the sound of an instrument they were playing. I think it is called, let me get my pronunciation thing, Iguiro. Like, I played that in elementary school. It's like the stick thing, and then when you go and like there's little grooves, and when you put the stick over the grooves, it makes like a fun little sound. And like in the soundtracks, I think the soundtrack was really good throughout the whole episode. As we brought up, like the beginning of the episode, the opening played, and then like the opening continued. This, I thought the music was really excellent. I even think the music was really good, even when she was at the coffee shop. The little cafe, not the cafe auditor, the cafe practice space venue, but like a different place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dolores is totally willing to like kill Pete, to like push Mutsumi down some steps, which is apt.
She was going to fall down pretty soon when she dies.
She's fell down a lot of steps, actually, because she fell down some steps when she had that psychotic break a few episodes ago, too.
We're not going to be specific about which psychotic break, because she's had so many now.
Yeah, yeah. Mutsumi's got injured quite a bit. I don't think she's bound to the doctor, because if she would have, I think someone would have, I think she probably would have been brought to some psychiatric care at this point. Not safe.
Yeah, she probably would have been hospitalized, and she probably should be.
I do think she should be hospitalized. I think she's a danger to herself and others. The blonde girl could become dangerous to others.
She certainly should be seeking outpatient care, at least.
She should, because she's desperate. Because like she also finally sees Sakiko, and you know what this just reminds me of? This does remind me of 22/7 of the, I think it's is that girl, it's like the main person of that. So there's like that main girl, like of 22/7, but then there's like, it's like the blonde girl that they met in like elementary school or middle school.
Yeah, the most valuable treasure.
I do feel very similar vibes here from like 22/7, where it's like Sakiko's like, who are you? Like, I'm surprised Sakiko didn't say, who are you? Because like Sakiko literally, when they interact at the cafe practice space venue, basically is like, she barely even interacts with her. It's like, Sako, you literally lived at this person's place. She fed you. She housed you for a while. And then you just get up and leave one day to go live with your dad again. Also, I forgot this. I didn't realize that the blonde girl also went to the same school that No Jacket Required and No Jacket and Jacket Required went to.
No, I do remember that.
I didn't. I forgot about that. Because we haven't seen her. Like, she hasn't shown up in. She doesn't go to the vending machines. She's not dating because the jackets aren't dating the blonde girl. So I guess that makes sense.
There's no threesome going on.
No. Well, I just don't think the blonde girl is attracted to No Jacket Required.
She's sake sexual, as we established.
She is very sake sexual. She would die for sake, but sake would be like, I kind of care more about Mutsumi. This is a classic love flow chart of where if you're a lead singer of a band, you really like sake, because I feel Tomori does have a thing for sake. Like when she sang that song to her about how you're not a doll, that was pretty romantic.
Yeah.
Mutsumi likes sake.
And really the only reason she wants to restart Krychek is for the sake of sake.
Yeah. I mean, also, once again, you know, making fun of No Jacket Required, she also does realize that this is literally a trauma band. And she's like, yes, I want to be in the band where Sakiko basically unleashes her trauma onto the world.
Yes.
And that's it. And it's like, what about us? And it's like, you know that it's about her. Like, why do you want to be in this band?
Because she doesn't care if everyone else suffers.
She doesn't. She kind of liked it.
She did get called the masochist at one point in the episode.
Oh, she did? Good. Okay, yeah.
Which is not how a lot of the fan art has depicted her. She's usually the top.
Wait, this show does make her very aloof and kind of silly.
Hmm.
I could see why she's a top, but I also get she's just kind of a silly person.
Yeah, yeah. She's very silly in the fan art.
Yeah.
She's too obsessed with pandas in the fan art.
Oh, yeah. She would be a bad girlfriend because she's too obsessed with herself. Like, if she could date herself, I mean, basically, she is just dating herself because Jacket Required does kind of look like her. So.
Yeah. Jacket Required and No Jacket Required were meant for each other.
Yeah, and it ends at the confrontation at the cafe where Purple Hair Girl is also there. All the characters are finally in the same room together. I think since they broke up.
Yeah, well, it's not just all of Ave Mujica, but Maigo is there too.
Maigo is there. That's right. That's right. Heterochromia Girl was there.
And she was like, I like what's happening with Mortis here.
Oh, that's right. Because I'm surprised she said, you're not Mutsumi, you're Mortis. I'm surprised
she
didn't.
Yes, because she knows. Because that heterochromia, she's like, only one of my eye colors sees a soul right now.
She didn't bring that up, but I was really hoping she would. She probably will.
I think she wants to play along with the troll and see what Mortis does.
That ghost cat girl that I know is real, but in my heart I believe she's a ghost cat.
Well, as we talked about, who is real, what is real, aren't we all just ghost cat girls at the end of the day?
I think so, because, like, is Ave Mojica real? Because, like, it's one of those weird things where, you know, it reminds me of Nine Inch Nails, or even though it's a little bit different, like, allow me to keep going with this. Or LCD Sound System, where we say it's this, but really a lot of time it's like the lead member of the band's band. And it's not really a band. Well, what's real, what's not real? Nothing is real, as we learned, because I don't know if any of these people like each other. Except maybe the people in Krychek, I think, actually liked each other. I don't think anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think.
And Maigo seems to be a pretty functional band.
A pretty functional band. Write in the comments or send a manifesto saying no, they also were not functional, because why would they be? We still haven't watched it. It'd be very
true.
It'd be very funny if they were functional. This is a very But yes. Any last things before we go? Rewatch the pushing scene. It's great. It's one of my favorite things that's happened in this whole show. I love it. It's so funny. The expression that's on Dolores' face is perfection. She could kill somebody. And it's great. And I love how it cuts and just does the same scene again. Music is there. It's great. I'm excited for the mom to show up in the next episode. And with that, this is the end of Petite Marxist Clover covering Ave Mojica, episode 9. We've never really said what episodes we're covering, but whatever. But I am your co-host, Angles Next Door, and this is my co-host,
Eric Hobbs Bond.
And we want you to have a wonderful day. And Mutsumi's dead. Long live Mortis.
Long live the Mortis.
おい、工藤。